Blog Talk Radio.
Hiatus to celebrate Memorial Day and do whatever those holiday traditions are you do with your family. Most people, I'm sure, go to some sort of beach or resort. Some people start grilling and cooking. And people like me sit home, lay on the sofa, watch television, and fall asleep with a beer in my hand. Out on the left coast, I have my good friend, good co-host, and all-around wonderful person, Miss Camel.
See, you can't even get 2 minutes into the show without starting no mess. Really?
I'm sorry.
Really, Theodore? Really?
Good evening, Kamal.
I'm out. I quit.
How you doing, babe? How's everything on the left side?
It was fine until a minute ago. You know, you forgot that people like me get out of the country for Memorial Day. We went to Canada and had a blast.
And yet they let you back in.
Barely. We barely got in and we barely got out. Don't even get me started.
Did you get
one word
good?
For you,
Are
apple.
You away?
One word, apple.
Oh, my goodness. Before we get started, I want to do a quick shout-out to a short and deep shout-out to my good dear friend, Miss Del Monica Hines. My heart prayers go out to you and your family, as you know. Love you, and praying for you.
We love you, Dale.
Need you to be better, babe. God has a plan. Now, so Kamal, tell me what's going on in your world. Talk to me. Everyone always hears about what's going on with me, and they all think that I'm the insane member of this little show.
You are. Well, you know, Seattle's coming off of a tale of some violence that even had me pulling up for a minute, because, you know, I walk in South Central with no problem. I ain't scared of them gangbanging Negroes by any stretch of imagination. But what scares me is these calm-looking people in business casual that go around and shoot up and kill five people. That's been keeping me out of downtown Seattle for about a minute. People like in Seattle, it used to be to get into Seattle, all you needed was some Birkenstocks and flannel, and you was cool. But we had some random violence. I think at the end of the day, over the last 2 weeks, I think 7 or 8 people have been killed, and it's been crazy. And, you know, people usually cut up when it's hot outside. It's been unseasonably cold. So we don't know what's going on, but, you know, we've talked about before how the police are off the chain here, too. So I don't know. Maybe people were fighting back. Things seem to have calmed down, but Seattle was on the national news for a minute.
You all caught Seattle, Washington, D.C. or something? What the heck, man?
I know, for real, right? Please. I don't even know what was happening, but I'll tell you what. At least we ain't had no zombies out here yet. And I always thought that the zombie apocalypse was going to start here because of the weather, you know. We got, and, you know, if you look at the television movies, we got the werewolves and the vampires, so why not the zombies? Mm-mm. Looks like the zombies started in Miami, Florida. Wasn't even ready for that.
Well, you do have family in Miami, do you not?
That is your favorite place, is it not?
It's my born again hometown.
Don't be bringing my cousins into this, because I and Todd, I'm two to the head. One to make sure they dead, and one to kill them, and one to make sure they dead. Period. Point blank. Two to the melon. But I mean, really, yeah. Come on now. He ate the man's face.
Okay.
How does that happen? So
those who don't follow the news as quickly as Kamal does, or get the National Enquirer. Let's break it down.
the Globe.
Let's break this extremely strange situation down.
So apparently there is this new drug on the streets, and it's like an LSD type of drug. So it's a hallucinogen, and it's called bath salts. I have no idea how you take it. I don't even know what it looks like, but if it's bath salts, it's probably like some little crystals, and you probably snort them. But and it's a man-made drug. So apparently when people take it, it heats their insides up and their organs up, almost like cooking them to the point where people just start stripping off their clothes. Now, my question is, in Miami, how do you know somebody's not stripping off their clothes to go swim? And how you know they're not stripping out their clothes because they're getting ready to eat your face? So that's the dilemma the people of Miami face. It's
Miami, right?
Miami.
You've never been to Miami?
Personally, I've never been to Miami, no. Why? What you trying to say? I know you've been.
Seeing as I have been to Miami several times and love it down there, I must tell you that you can tell when someone is stripping off their clothes to eat you because you're not in the nightclub and you're not on the beach. On the beach in a nightclub, people will come out of their clothing, and it's usually because they're either going to swim or the party's about to really get started.
What if somebody took bath salts at the club? You know, people do drugs in clubs.
Yeah, but if they start stripping their clothes off in the club to eat somebody, it's going to get messy because everybody's going to be naked. The police won't know who to shoot, or who to taser, who to lock up. But
I'll tell you, who's the one that's leaning over somebody eating their face? That's who you tase. So
seen that in clubs in Miami, and maybe they weren't eating a face, but a raw.
Yeah, boom, boom. So anyway, so it's the middle of the day, and nobody understands why this brother was like this. I mean, by all accounts, he was a little depressed because, you know, he'd had some financial issues. But prior to that incident, he was more or less normal. And they were saying that he, you know, he smoked marijuana once or twice, but he wasn't a drug partaker. And so he hemmed up this homeless man off the side of some bridge, and people could see them tussling, but not a whole lot because there was like a railing in the way. And you're driving, you know, you can only see so much, you know, a quick glance when you're driving. And a couple of bicyclists went by and saw him, you know, attacking the guy, but didn't see him eating the guy. And then this one bicyclist came by and was like, hold up, wait a minute, and called the police. And the police ended up shooting him. Now, I wish they had tased his butt so we could figure out what was going on with him, if he thought he was eating a piece of steak or something. But the end of the day is, and I'm going to get graphic, and I apologize, but he ate the man's face. I mean, all that was left was he ate it down to the bone. There was no more flesh on this man's forehead. He ate his nose, his ears, his mouth. they're going to have to do a whole entire new face construction surgery. And this particular drug has started to make its way west. Although there have been no more face-eating incidences, they have come across people who have taken it and just run them butt naked up and down the street. I think the latest was like in St. Louis. So,
let me just pull you back a smidgen. As a Baltimore resident, born and raised here in Baltimore, and a proud member of the Morgan State University community, I have to let you know.
Well, but that's different. They haven't proven that he was taking that drug. For all we know, the one that you're talking about, the Morgan State guy who ate the brains and the heart, all we know, he was just crazy.
Well, see, first of all, he wasn't crazy because knowing healthy considerations, he did some cooking. He didn't just raw eat this man's liver and stuff. He decided to cut off some parts, pop them in the fryer with some oil, and had them with with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
And see, that's what I understand. This is some next level Jeffrey Dahmer ish.
Yeah.
Who does this? I do not look at people and say, them lips so look like they would be good in some hog mugs with some hog mugs and greens. I don't look at people as a meal. Who does this?
Well,
why on earth? Why? I mean, did his roommate piss him off? I mean, what level do you have to go to when you are not on bath salts and you eat in a brother? How does that happen?
Don't be surprised if some woman didn't come up with this drug and didn't know somebody would, not put a cut on it.
Okay, whatever. You know what? Look, that's why I'm staying out of Baltimore. Why am I staying out of Baltimore?
Because the police have asked you to.
Because of what? Because of snow? Tornadoes?
Okay.
Hurricanes?
We've had a few weather issues here over the last few years. But none of them have been so bad that, it would prohibit travel. If you can go to Canada, you can certainly come to Baltimore.
Hurricanes and tornadoes and huge amounts of snow and cannibalism in Canada. Not at my border. Now, I can't talk about northern Canada, but in Vancouver and the area I travel, I'm good.
Look, the Baltimore survival kit must include snow boots, a raincoat, an archway, and evidently now some hot sauce. You got to have a little hot sauce because, brains just aren't brains unless you have a little hot sauce on it.
No, apparently I need a 9mm. And what's an archway?
The archway in your house. In the case, you should know this, Miss California.
Oh, okay. A foyer. Okay.
So that, you know, the house won't collapse on you.
Yeah, speak California.
So lay in the bathtub. That's a tornado you lay in the bathtub. I get my natural disaster precautions confused. So let's get off the cannibalism. Let's move on to the really bizarre things going on in the world. How about your Uncle Donald Trump?
How about your Uncle Donald Trump messing with my cousin Arsenio?
I want to know. I know you and Arsenio are actual friends. Can you please explain to me? I know Arsenio's career took a real hard dive once Eddie Murphy found out that he'd rather hang out with New Edition people instead of him, and let Johnny Gill move in and kicked Arsenio out. But is it that bad that he has to go on The Apprentice and pander to Donald, to the Donald?
Well, first of all, Arsenio is not one of my homies, so let's just get that cleared up real quick. But, I mean, you know what? I don't think Arsenio's hurting for money. Honestly, I think he made enough money doing that talk show. I mean, look, he's from Cleveland. He don't need a whole bunch of money. And from what I understand, he's been raising his son for the past 10, 12 years. And you don't make a whole lot of money going on The Apprentice. I think you make they give him like $100,000, $125,000, which when Nene says, "I'm rich, bitch," makes it that much funnier. But who called it? We knew he was going to do that. I think we said it between amongst ourselves. Watch. He's going to say something stupid, and he's going to say that he can't be racist because he let Arsenio Hall win The Apprentice. And he did just that. You know, I can't be racist. I hire black people. I mean, he's out of control. He is not.
No. He's always had a good relationship with the blacks.
The blacks. Right. He's always had a good relationship with the blacks. And see, what upsets me about it is that Romney won't pull him up. You know, out of the side of his mouth, he's like, well, I can't be held responsible for what my supporters say. But you know what? It's not, you know, some crazy woman with crazy hair talking about, you know, he's a Muslim. This is a man who's fundraising for him, who is going on shows for him and presenting himself as a spokesperson for the Romney campaign.
Well, this is true. And one of the things that has always been amazing to me is whenever we have someone on the left or liberal or the Democratic Party, however they want to be phrased, whenever we have one of these talking heads get out of character, come off message, say something a little bit crazy, case in point, Cory Booker, 2 weeks ago, or the lady who works for CNN, who liberal, who said that Mitt Romney's wife never had to work. Not only do those people fall all over themselves apologizing, as Cory Booker did, but everyone has to step up and speak for them. Oh, I'm sure he didn't mean it that way. You took it out of context. You don't have to understand, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yet, on the Republican side, the right side of the aisle, there's no apologizing. There's no pulling anything back. You, as we've said on the show before, you have Newt Gingrich saying that he wants poor, underprivileged children in public schools to work as janitors to pay for their education. He doesn't walk that back. He doesn't apologize for that. No one.
Yeah, but you know what? Because Newt Gingrich is gangster. He's like Dick Cheney gangster, so Newt Gingrich ain't never going to walk nothing back.
No, he's not going to walk anything back, but no one speaks up for him, and Newt's not gangster. Newt's been punked, but someone should speak for Newt. I mean, yeah, Dick Cheney is you know, the reincarnation of Darth Vader, you know, walking the earth, shoot someone in the face with a shotgun and get them to apologize to his family for putting him through a whole lot of...
You will apologize for maybe shooting you in the face.
Yes.
You walked into the bullets.
But you never, ever hear anyone on that side of the aisle. No one has stepped up and said that Donald Trump was wrong. No one has stepped up and said, you know, his comments were taken out of context, which we know they weren't. No one holds them accountable, so they keep saying this stuff. And this is why you can have Donald Trump re-litigating the Bertha comments and the Bertha theories, or conspiracy theories, and not only that, but also bleed into this whole, well, Obama didn't earn his way into Colombia. He got there under set-asides. And I think the whole thing is not only aggravating, but it's just racial, racist rhetoric, and it's designed to drum up the lower IQ members of our society to get them to come on board with the Republicans because their real numbers are dwindling. More, in my opinion, more intelligent, free-thinking non-minorities are realizing that there's a bunch of craziness going on with the Republican Party, and they may not become vocal, and they may not all come over to the left side of the aisle, but they're not coming out in the numbers that they used to be in the 50s and 60s and 70s. So now the younger, more intelligent, and older, more intelligent people who we would have always thought of as right-leaning or conservative-leaning, they're not the ones that are being talked to anymore by the talking heads. Now you get people who Obama has to be out, a foreigner. He didn't earn his education, his right to go to Columbia. How could he go to Columbia? How dare him get the Nobel Peace Prize when he hadn't done anything? As if Barack Obama was out there campaigning to win the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, it's the so-called Southern strategy. You make the populist, the Republican populist fear and feel as though the country's being taken over by an other. And, in terms of the more moderate, free-thinking, non-crazy Republicans, they are being eaten alive by this group of crazies that's currently running the party. We would love for somebody more moderate. I love Alan Simpson, old dude, the former senator, I think from Utah, because Alan Smith is like, I'm on my way out. And he is just ripping them new mud holes left and right. But he's few and far in between, because if you speak out in this current Republican Party and you are a person of any type of political power, they will beat you with a sock full of nickels, period, point blank. Your opinion is not needed or wanted unless it is radicalized in this current Republican Party.
Right, and if you're moderate, it's like saying you've had sex with dogs.
Right.
No one wants to associate with you. One of our online listeners just posted a comment that no one called out the congressman from South Carolina who called President Obama a liar during the State of the Union address a few years ago. And she's absolutely right. There was no outcry. I do believe, if I remember correctly, back before he lost his entire mind, John McCain said there was no room for that in the Republican Party or in Congress, period. But other than that, I don't remember any cries of outrage.
No, the only outrage was Nancy Pelosi getting ready to get up and throw her shoe.
Right.
That was, and then Joe Biden was like, what the front door? But no, you wouldn't have done that to Bush. Nobody did that to Bush. Nobody's done it to any sitting president in recent memory. I know, back in the day they used to be off the chain. They would get up and act stupid in Congress, in the 1700s and 1800s. But since we've established a model of decorum, nobody's ever done no craziness like that.
No, nobody's done anything like that. And I remember being a little bit older than you, I remember when Ronald Reagan came into office, the very first press conference, they laid the law down. There'll be no more jumping up, Mr. President, Mr. President, Mr. President. You raise your hand, and the president will acknowledge you, and then you can ask your question. And that precedent was set, and it set the tone and should be the tone even as far, from that point on to today. And though this wasn't a press conference, there is no way anyone during the Reagan era would have done anything like that in a State of the Union address or any other forum that the president was speaking amongst congressional fellows. Just the whole idea of it is just ridiculous that it even could have happened. But again, the fallout was minimal. There was no fallout. No one sanctioned this man. No one, pulled him up. You didn't see John Boehner going over to apologize for him. It was embarrassing.
No, and not only that, they should have written a letter, and I forget what the letter is called, but when they say a sanction, a letter of sanction is what they should have done, or a letter of censure. He used it as a campaign issue and was raising money. He raised something like $2 or $3 million the next day. And he was like, I ain't taking it back. Mm-mm.
Right. Not only did he refuse to take it back, and you're right, he wasn't sanctioned, and he used it as a fundraiser. You then have the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court disagreeing with the president when he says that legislation.
Yeah, it wasn't the chief. It wasn't Roberts. It was Alito.
You sure it was Alito? I thought it was Roberts. I'm pretty sure it was Roberts.
You're getting your white man confused. No, it was Alito. Alito's the one that was sitting there and said, that's not true. He shook his head and said, that's not true. That was Alito.
Okay, I'm going to take your word for it, but I just remember seeing the stripes on the shoulder.
Nope, it was Alito.
Well, but the president was so wrong that we now have super PAC money in every aspect of electoral processes across this country today.
You're absolutely right. It doesn't matter if it was Alito or Roberts. The bottom line is the president was right.
The president was right, and he was upstaged by whomever was making the noise, making the gesture.
Again, who does that? Who does that? I have never, in my 25 years, I have never seen anybody sitting on the bench in the Supreme Court openly disagree with the president during a State of the Union speech. Now, you know, somebody else might be a little older than 25 and remember an incident that I do not remember. Yale, you're 70. Do you remember anything?
No. As a matter of fact, I remember extreme bipartisanism in both houses of Congress on both sides of the aisle coming to the forefront when the nation was in trouble, whether it be on a war front, whether it be in the midst of a national crisis as far as economic situation or whatever, for the good civil rights, for the good of the nation, both parties historically have put aside petty differences to get things done. You know, mm-hmm. during the civil rights movement, the beginning of the civil rights movement, the Supreme Court, when faced with Brown versus Board of Education, handed down a unanimous decision that separate but equal was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't get that in the court in today's atmosphere, and you certainly will not get that in Congress.
No, or the Senate. It won't even get to that point. What is going on in the Senate is reprehensible and shameful. You know, we've been talking about the war on women. Oh, there's no so-called war on women. I beg your pardon. They just voted today to not even hear, not even allow out of cloture the Fair Pay for Women Act. You can't tell me there's not a war on women when you won't even allow us to have our little 23 cents an hour more. On average, men get paid, for every dollar a man gets paid, a woman gets 77 cents. They wouldn't even give us a quarter. But there's no war on women? I mean, come on, between, you know, all these bills popping up on abortion rights and Planned Parenthood and this, that, and the other, even the jobs bill. I mean, the jobs bill affects all Americans. But women are disproportionately poorer than men. You know, there's just, you know, single mothers. Let's just go there. And yet still, every single bill that they have brought forth to help women won't even get out of cloture to even discuss. And they keep voting them down. And today's vote was straight down the party line. They needed 60 votes. It was 47 to 53. 53 Democrats, 47 Republicans. All 47 Republicans voted against getting it out of cloture. So now they have to go back, repackage it, and bring it forth again.
What they need to do is have Obama come out against it, then it will pass, because the Republicans will not know what to do, and they will be anti-anything Obama says, and they'll pass the bill.
I know, right? If he comes out against it, they'll pass it. Maybe he needs to do that, you know, because honestly, I've been reading the tea leaves, and we're not going to get, we being the Democrats, are not going to get 60 this next election. We may go up to 55, but we're not going up to 60. And so the gridlock is going to continue.
What I think people are missing, and I are missing, and I hope to God I'm right, but there's no evidence to support this hypothesis of mine at all. But I hope that even if the Democrats do not regain majority of Congress or the Senate, that some seats are won by more moderate thinking Republicans, and this crazy gridlock that has been created that sees Congress's approval rating in single digits will start to fall away.
But there aren't, at this juncture, there aren't any moderate Republicans actually running. There are Tea Party back candidates running again in both the Congress and the Senate.
Well,
so unless by some miracle people say, you know what, this particular Republican candidate is just too radical for us, and they vote for the Democrat, we'll pick up maybe two, at the most, I think, three seats at this time. You know, things may change the closer to election, and I might change that. But for right now, what I'm reading and looking at, it's just getting ready to get worse.
Well, you also have a moderate running for a Republican. The Republican nominee for president is a moderate this week.
A moderate what? A moderate jackass? Don't nobody know what he is.
He's a moderate this week. Next week, he could be not so moderate. The week after that, he could be very radical. 2 weeks after that, you don't know what he is or what he'll be. But if it'll get him votes, he will be a moderate if he can pick up votes. The man changes like the wind.
Yeah, with his non-spelling staff. There's two things that scare me about Mitt Romney. One didn't used to scare me, but his staff can't spell. We're going to look up, and he's going to be trying to put solve on something and spell it slave, and we all shit out of luck. He bothers me he's like this old guy. Like, it's like he's 172. I fully expect him to say, jump at Jehoshaphats or something crazy like that. Jump at Jehoshaphats. Look at those hobos. I don't want no 172-year-old president. And I mean, and to not be, you know, facetious, he has no core. You and I have talked about this. I mean, at the end of the day, even if he said jump at Jehoshaphats, he has no core. He blows with the wind. Whatever the polling says, that's the way he goes. And I just want him to just stand for something. I want him to have a backbone. I want him to face up to these people. I want him to smack the hair off of Donald Trump and say, you need to stop saying all this black stuff on my dime. But he's not going to do that. And, you know, the way this country's going, I mean, this world is going, you know, Pakistan's pissed at us again. You know, I need somebody in there with conviction. And you can say what you want about PBL, but his foreign policy is above reproach. And I don't feel that Mitt Romney will have a solid foreign policy. And I don't believe that he gets domestic issues. I don't think that he's going to be looking out for me and my mama and you and your mama, honestly. I think he's going to be looking out for Donald Trump. And we've already done that. We did that for 8 years, and we see what happened.
Well, it's not only did we do it for 8 years, we did it for 8 plus 12 years, because you had 8 years of Ronald Reagan, 4 more years of George Herbert Walker Bush, and then 8 years of George W. Bush. You have to understand that social issues across the board are not in the Republicans' marching orders. They don't care about social issues. They don't care about, as you said, they don't care about you and your mama, or me and my mama, or me and your mama. They don't care. Their main focal point, as Mitt Romney is running on, is they can make money for people who are quote unquote job creators. And let's be honest, job creators aren't in the business of creating jobs to help the economy. they're only in the business of creating jobs if it helps their bottom line. And if they create a job, they will lowball the salary of that individual, and they will maximize profits for their organization. So the so-called job creators that Romney is leaning toward and pandering to aren't in it to create jobs to help the nation. The only person running for president who is in it to help the nation is Barack Obama. And though I have heard people on my side of the aisle decry him for every little thing that he's not doing to help them specifically or not help blacks specifically, the conviction I get from Barack Obama is he is in it to help the nation.
Right. He is not the president of black America. He is the president of America.
Is the president of
America. People need to figure that out.
And he is the president to push not just social changes, but political and economic changes. You can't expect to go back to trickle-down economics, which failed under Reagan, which never got started under Herbert Walker Bush, and that was just completely even ignored or promoted under George W. Bush. It's not about trickle-down. It's about gathering in. Let's gather in the dollars for us, and, oh, by the way, if we can make money if we can make money by hiring people, then we'll do it. But cheap labor is cheap labor, and you will have Apples of America, you will have IBM, you will have Microsoft, all of these companies who are touted as being large American success stories, farming their workers and their work out to developing nations because the labor is so much cheaper there. And it's not bottom line helping America. It's bottom line helping their bottom line.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm like, I'm one of those greedy Americans because I just paid several hundred dollars for my iPhone. I'm not paying several thousand for it. I'm sorry.
And that's incredible. And trust me, I'm an electronic nerd too. You know that. But the bottom line is they're not going to create jobs. These companies aren't going to create jobs here. They're going to create them wherever. So my point I think I'm trying to make is that the whole lie being perpetrated against us is we help big business, and big business will help grow bring jobs back to America. It won't. The only way you can bring jobs back to this country is by working together to find solutions, and this political atmosphere today, that's so hard to do.
So one of our chat room people said, "I'm sorry, President Obama ain't done all that, but I will say this much: he's a true politician." So let's address that for a minute. He's not a dictator. You know, he can only do so much without the backing of the Senate and the Congress. And, you know, when they won't get his bills pushed through, what is he supposed to do? Now, I think I said 2 weeks ago, I would love for him to pull an LBJ and go walk down to somebody's office and threaten to shoot their dog and salt their earth to get it done. But that's just not who he is.
Not only is that not who he is, but you know someone, whoever he does that to, will call the security. There's a mad Negro loose.
Right, and then it'll be all over the news where they're looking for this tall black man with big ears. Have you seen him?
And then John Lewis will get clubbed in the hallway. You look close enough.
Right.
I like to address
him
that too.
Shaka Fatah. Shaka Fatah just on GP for having the audacity to be a congressman named Shaka Fatah.
Exactly. He's a Muslim. He and Obama, they're a sleeper cell.
Right. And Keith Ellis, they're a sleeper cell of Muslims in the White House corridors. But I mean, you know, not to belittle what our chat room person said. I mean, you know, that's a valid feeling. I disagree with it because if you look at the entire picture, like I said, he's not a dictator. How is he supposed to get all the stuff done that he wants done when he can't get stuff out of committee? They won't, you know, there are things they won't even allow to be discussed on the floor. That's how crazy it is. You know, I mean, I will not forget John Conyers having a committee hearing, and he wasn't even really allowed to call it a committee hearing, basically in the broom closet, because Boehner wouldn't even let it come to the floor, wouldn't even put it on the docket. You know, that's how crazy it is.
He is certainly in a position that no president in my memory or in recent memory of anyone else can mention to have to fight a Congress that is non-functional and unwilling to move or compromise. Even Harry Truman had people who were right-thinking enough to compromise. They may not have wanted to do things, but they realized that they had to do things to move the country forward. Was Harry Truman as great a president as they want to tout Reagan to be or Eisenhower to be? Probably not. But he did know how to go shake the trees and get things done. And God bless him, whether our chat room contributor wants to admit it or not, the man is trying. He is trying to get things done. He did try to get a jobs bill passed. He did go out and get Don't Ask, Don't Tell repealed. He did get health care legislation pushed through Congress. And yes, he did push it, and it causes people to say, oh, he burnt the Constitution by doing it. No, he did exactly what he was supposed to do in a leadership role in this country. He has not lied to the American people or to Congress to get things done, a la George Bush lying about weapons of mass destruction so he could push his Iraq war agenda. He told it like it was, and these people don't want to hear it. You're shaking the foundations of some institutional hardliners who don't want to relinquish anything, especially to a man of color, especially to a black man in America who they don't think is legitimately working in the job he was elected to do.
I absolutely agree. We've got a really interesting discussion going on in the chat room, and we've heard some comments. He could have. Let's see. Let me go back a minute. One of our chat members seems to believe, and I can't say I disagree with her, that once he's reelected, he'll get more done because he can't get reelected again. So he's just going to do what he needs to do, which is something that I've been saying since almost day one, that I felt that he was running for a first term to get to his second term, so he could go, I like to say, balls to the wall, and pardon me, but that's what I say, and just see what he needs to do, because he doesn't have to worry about getting reelected, because he can't get reelected. So, you know, just go scorched earth as much as he can. You know, I mean, there's only so much he can do with not having any type of real majority in the Senate or Congress, although I do think the tide's going to turn in the Congress, actually, truthfully. But, you know, even he's just going to let it all hang out.
Well, he has no choice. I think that we have to remember that that is the marching orders of every president that's elected. You run for your second term. You run to be elected so that you can have a second term in order to get things done. Obama made a bold statement with the health care reform because he did what needed to be done when he could get it done. When you come into office, when any president comes into office for his first term, he has a lot of political capital, and he had to spend it where he could. I think everyone online and listening in and across this nation will agree that President Obama, by virtue of the way he was elected, has had to fight uphill from the moment he was sworn in. I mean, I've never seen it before that there were conspiracy theories being bantered about the man's swearing in ceremony.
Oh God. His presidency since then has been like pushing a car up a hill with a rope. I mean, it's amazing that he's been able to get the stuff done. The few things that he's been able to get done, it's amazing that he's been able to get it done. And yeah, the swearing in ceremony where John Roberts, you know, messed up. The conspiracy theorist in me, he did that mess on purpose, you know, to just plant a seed so that they could delegitimize his presidency even further. But that's just me. And I didn't always be this way. I didn't used to be, you know, they're out to get us. But, as more stuff comes out, you know, the secret dinner that they had, you know, the night of his swearing in to do everything in their power to get him out of office, and, you know, Mitch McConnell, turtlehead, saying, you know, our job is to make sure he does not get a second term, you know, it got my little paranoia up. But I don't think it's necessarily unfounded.
No, it's not unfounded. But you have to understand something. And I'm addressing the chat room conversation going on now as well. For those listening in and not and don't have access to the computer, part of the consternation in the chat room is one of the contributors is saying that they like President Obama as a person but don't necessarily agree with everything he's doing. You have to understand, and I don't know how old this individual is, in my politically aware lifetime, okay, so the first president I voted for, first presidential election I voted for was Carter v. Reagan. I have never seen a single president, and though Carter v. Reagan was my first opportunity to vote in a presidential election, I do remember Carter's presidency. I remember Nixon's presidency. I remember Ford's presidency and a little bit of Johnson's. But I've never seen a president, and that includes Bill Clinton, never get stumped on a question or from a reporter or anything yelled out from someone in the audience or in any situation other than Barack Obama. This man has never been caught off guard, has never had to get back to you moment, has never been put in a position where he was uncomfortable on stage or showed it. He always had an answer. He always had a firm grasp of everything. As far as I can tell, and there hasn't been any reporting to the contrary, he doesn't have people planted in the audience to throw softball questions his way, a la George W. Bush's administration would. He's taken every question, every comment on, and answered it. Now, not everyone has liked the questions. Not everyone has liked his answers. Sometimes he's had to do a sidestep because of something that Joe Biden has said or done, but he's always prepared. Always, no matter who he's talking to, whether it be someone that is a citizen of this country, a reporter from another country, a foreign leader on a foreign land, he's always been prepared. He's never had his who's the president of Ubaki, Baki, Baki, Stan. He's always come prepared. He's very learned. He's very deeply invested in what he's trying to do. And we, as a people, even people on his side, we have all, at some point or another, underestimated him. I remember hearing my mother say one time that she was just disappointed in everything that was going on around him, but he's trying. At least he was elected. He got his first term. And I know what she was saying. I think she was believing that the everything was stacked so far against him that he couldn't go forward. And at some points, I felt that way too. And I know a lot of people have felt that way. But at every turn, even after that moment that my mother brought up, he's always had something else in his pocket to come out and slap somebody upside the head with. When Donald Trump was doing the whole birther thing and he's not fit to be president and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, Barack Obama was as cool as the other side of the pillow, pulling out, having the birth certificate sent here from Hawaii so he could say, how you like me now, went to the correspondence dinner the next night, was on point with his jokes and his wit and his banter, all the while knowing that he had already ordered troops to go into a foreign nation and assassinate or capture, I'm doing the quote fingers for those who can't see me, capture the most hated man in the world.
But yeah, and that signifies his presidency, I think. Grace under fire, grace under pressure. You would have never known that they were out there getting ready to plug a hole into bin Laden based on his demeanor and the jokes he was throwing at Donald Trump, the well-deserved jokes he was throwing at Donald Trump. You know, he's standing in front of the nation, you know, on C-SPAN, as it were, skinning and grinning, while they're taking out bin Laden. You know, at that point, you know, the next day when the news breaks, you know, there were all these memes, and for you guys who don't know what a meme is, or a meme, if you will, it's a, you know, something that goes through the internet on wildfire, you know, the pictures, the commentary. And we all know the one of him holding a box of donuts and the foul language that I will not repeat here, but it basically was like, okay, what you want now? I just did X, Y, and Z. What else can I do for you? Thank you very much. And I personally thought that that was going to pull some people up. You know, I thought, okay, he has taken out the man that we have spent bazillion dollars, 11 gazillion dollars trying to catch, countless of deaths between the deaths that were stateside and the deaths that were in this war, and I'm using air quotes on that. He's got him. We can all rejoice. Now they're going to give him some slack. Now they're going to give him some breathing room. I mean, this man has accomplished in, what was it, 2 years? Because it was like in 2.5 years what it took Bush 7.5 years not to do.
Well, not only that, not only did it take Bush 7.5 years or 8 years, well, yeah, 7.5 years that he couldn't do, people forget, and it's been documented, that the CIA office to capture or kill bin Laden had been dismantled and disbanded by the Bush administration. They had given up. George W. Bush came on in a press conference, said he doesn't worry about bin Laden anymore. He doesn't think about bin Laden anymore. He's
and
as far
laughed
as,
when he said it.
Right. So, you know, we let's not get it twisted. Barack Obama came into office, and he reinstituted that office, and it was his number one priority as far as the CIA was concerned. And in my opinion, not since the Eisenhower administration was the CIA used more effectively and efficiently. You all are going to find this man. You're going to let us know where he is, and we are going to get him. And he went out, and he got him. And he got little to no respect from it after a day of everyone celebrating and high-fiving as if they did it. John McCain high-fived people with his little arms. You had.
Why do you call him Teddy Ruxpin?
I hate you so much.
You didn't need to go there. You didn't need to call the man Teddy Ruxpin.
I hate you so much right now.
I'm sorry. Go on.
why you snorted, because you caught yourself one. But you had Orange Glow John Boehner high-fiving. And then it took literally a week before people were saying, who was it, Mitt Romney? No, it wasn't Mitt Romney. It was Newt Gingrich that came out and said anybody could have done it. Anybody would have done it. Then
but
Mitt Romney.
Anybody didn't.
Right. Mm-hmm. Then you got Romney coming out and saying, well, he wouldn't have authorized it. He wouldn't have gone into a foreign nation and risked with Obama risked.
Because he
and
has no car. But, 3 months before that, they were like, well, what is he doing? Why won't he do it? It's like it's so blatant and obvious. They criticize him for not doing something. When he does it, they criticize him for having done it. It's ridiculous.
Right. He can't win for losing. And now the most ridiculous thing, even more ridiculous than him being not an American citizen, is Mitt Romney giving the president F's on everything he's done since he's taken office, yet taking credit for everything that Obama has done as being his idea to begin with, including saving the auto industry in America with the auto bailouts, including his plan to kill Osama bin Laden.
Well, that's why I have criticized Romney. Everybody changes their mind. People flip-flop. So be it, especially politicians. But Romney doesn't flip-flop. He just straight-out lies. When you can say, well, that was my plan, with regards to the auto industry, and we have this 17-page op-ed that says, let them fail, let them go bankrupt. You just like, what planet are you on? Did your alter ego say that? What is really going on? I mean, Mitt Romney is such a liar. And I don't necessarily think that he is a liar in his day-to-day world, but I think he's a liar while running for president. It's like, this base wants me to say that. Well, I'll say that. This base wants me to say that. Well, I'll say that. Oh, these donors need me to say that. Well, I'll say that.
Again, Mitt Romney, for those under 25, is on Planet Sheen. And if you don't know what Planet Sheen is, I advise you to look at two networks and find out what Planet Sheen is, because Mitt Romney is Sheen. But you're right. It's not just out-and-out lying. It's not the same flip-flopping that you will get or the changing you will get of political candidates once they take office. It's a ridiculous, easily verifiable or condemning of standpoints that this man takes. And again, no one but the people on the left hold Mitt Romney responsible for. The people on the right, it's because they have to flip-flop on him. They were dead set against him for as long as he was running until he became the front runner. Now everybody's in love with him. Even Newt Gingrich the other day came out in support of something that Romney said. I mean,
Peter's in the cabinet position. That's just the bottom line. I don't know what he's going to make him, Secretary of Means.
He's going to be Secretary of Child Labor Laws, of Child Slavery, and Donuts.
And Zoos.
But, when we sit and look at this whole thing from our standpoint, now I'm outside the Beltway, you're outside, the Midwest, and wherever, was that Pacific Northwest? Is that what they call you guys out there?
At and what?
this is a family show. At least I want it to be. But we look at this thing from outside, as outsiders, all of us, even the talking heads who sit around and try to pontificate about what they think is going on and what things should be. But we really don't know how ugly the true politics of this man's presidency has become for him. We know what we see and what we feel the effects of. Considering the dire straits in which this country was in 2008, which everyone seems to want to forget, that our economy was on the verge of collapse. We were literally staring a Greece-type situation straight in the eye. He was still, and his people were still, savvy enough to only ask for a stimulus that could jumpstart the economy, hopefully, not rescue the economy, which was needed. The stimulus needed to be much bigger than what was approved. But he knew asking that would spend some of his political capital that he needed and he used on health care reform to help this nation get started. And as much as we want to sit back and talk about what he should do, what he shouldn't do, what he could do, what he couldn't do, he's calculating and he's smooth and he sees a bigger plan. And the shame, in my opinion, the shame of what would happen in this country if he is not reelected and Romney is elected is that we will not see what that bigger plan is. Because one thing
chess
we all...
Because PDO, he plays chess. Mitt Romney plays checkers. You know, PDO, he thinks of things... He plots and plans, in my opinion. I don't know the man personally, but from what I can tell, he thinks way ahead of the game, like a strategist. How did he say strategery? He's a strategery to figure out what his next move is. And he thinks 5, 6, 7 moves ahead of himself. Mitt Romney, he plays checkers.
Well, what you got to look at is even if we were to lose this election and Romney comes in, Romney is not going to be able to do anything that would take the country forward any faster than Barack Obama has put in place. You're going to have to jump, you're going to have to go back to square one and start all over again. And the economy turnaround, which took 8 years to destroy, is not going to happen in 3 or 4 years. You know, a lot of economic experts are predicting that it would take a full 10 years for the economy to get back on track, but it's now pointed in the right direction. So it's not moving fast enough. This is another talking point to have. It's not moving fast enough. But we're moving forward, but we don't want to acknowledge that it's not moving fast enough. In order to make it go faster, you're going to have to go back to square one.
Please, it's going to take a good 20 years to fix the 8 years of the Bush administration. That's just the bottom line. Because, I mean, there's stuff that we don't even know they did, you know, let alone keeping the war off the books. There is no telling how many back doors they left in there financially, you know, who they were giving money to under the table, who they, you know, these no big contracts. We just don't know to the extent of what they did.
Remember the closed door meetings that Dick Cheney would hold with leaders of the oil industry in the beginning of the Bush administration? You know, fuel subsidies aside, you know, they sold the future. I hear people talk about, our children's children won't be able. None of this is on the lap of Barack Obama. Barack Obama did not come into office and destroy the economy. He had to spend to fix. People forget you got two wars that were unfunded in the history of the world.
Ancient in real life in the world.
Three. Wars are fought by nations that win when they tax and sometimes lose, but when they tax the citizenry to pay for the war. You can't cut taxes in a wartime situation and expect there not to be a bill come due.
Yeah, and it came due on our watch, on PBO's
watch. And it's going to be, and Barack Obama has gotten us out of the war that we did not have to be in, and is scaling down the war that should have been finished in 2, maybe 3 years if the focus had been on that. But it wasn't.
No, because, you know what, and I remember, and I don't know how many other people remember, but I remember Bush selling wolf tickets on Saddam Hussein before he was even president. I remember during some debate where he was just talking about Saddam Hussein, and I was sitting here like, why is he talking about Saddam Hussein? What does that got to do with the price of tea in China? Is that un-PC? Yeah.
Well, you're absolutely right.
That?
Remember the axis of evil? If you're not with us, you're against us?
Yeah, but can I say the price of tea in China? Is that going to get me in trouble?
Only with the because they have. But the Chinese Americans and Chinese listeners are not going to be upset with you unless you start talking about the way they drive.
America, I disavow statements that just came out of Yale Theodore Beverly's mouth. I disavow. Full-throatedly. But, I mean, I remember. And so, you know, when he started this war, it was no surprise to me because I remember that he had been talking about that before he was even elected. He went in office gunning for a reason to go after Hussein.
Yeah, because the man tried to kill his daddy.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfinished business. It was unfinished business.
This is a business, I know, right?
I had a coworker at one of my jobs after 9/11 who had been former military and worked in the Pentagon. And I remember him distinctly saying to me, from talking to his former cronies and friends, what the biggest joke around the Pentagon was a punchline, and the punchline was Saddam Hussein, and the joke was. The joke was Saddam Hussein, and the punchline was he didn't start. He wasn't responsible for 9/11, but he sure should have been. So in other words, they knew then they were going after this man before they even invaded Afghanistan. They knew they were going to try to find some way to pin this on Saddam Hussein and go back to Iraq and finish what had not been accomplished 10 years before that. And I've spoken to directly, and I've seen and heard people say that they signed up, you know, they joined the military after 9/11 so they could go, you know, invade Iraq and get and pay Iraq back for what had happened on 9/11. And there is no evidence ever put forth that Iraq was responsible for 9/11. But it was a big lie that was sold to all of us.
It's discussions like these that make me want to get my tin hat and just dust off my tinfoil hat and just stick it on my head and sit outside. Because it's so crazy, but it's so true. I told you, this is just conspiracy theory. Just conspiracy theory. I hate that we have been put in a position as citizenry to have to wear tinfoil hats. You know what I mean? And I don't say that disparagingly.
No, but your tinfoil hat has a little duck on the front of it, and I think that's cute. I just wanted you to know.
I quit.
I mean, we all have our conspiracy theories, and some of them are true, and some of them are just completely way off base. I mean, But I think we have to acknowledge that one of the great things about this country is that everyone should have the ability to have an opinion. Some of it crazy, some of it has no place in the normal conversation, that the day-to-day conversation that happens in this country. But a lot of it does, and it doesn't get to be said because we get marginalized as they are trying to marginalize Barack Obama. Let me move off of this slightly and talk about Bill Clinton.
Wisconsin! Oh, no, Bill Clinton. Okay.
So we're going to finish with Wisconsin because I'm trying to push this as far as possible, even though there will be no election results before we go off air. But are we, and this is also for the people in the room and the listeners online, and on the phone lines, what are we to take from Bill Clinton coming back into the limelight in support of Barack Obama?
I think you should put support in air quotes. I mean, honestly. Because, you know what, I don't believe that Bill Clinton has any real affection for Barack Obama. I really don't. I think that he puts on a good show, but, you know, he occasionally lets his true colors, you know, fly. And, you know, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if he's jealous because Barack Obama is the true first black president. I don't know if he's still salty over, you know, the bashing his wife took in the election. But, you know, Bill's a loose cannon. And, you know, some people respect him for just being honest and saying what he wants to say. I mean, you know, they're talking about his approval of Mitt Romney's job over at Bain Capital. And, you know, the Democrats, of course, would prefer that Mitt Romney not get any praise for that. So what does Bill do? He goes out and praises them. But, you know, you have to take the good with the bad. It's kind of like Joe Biden. You know that he's going to say something off the wall and off message. And is it worth it, you know? Is having Bill around, is the squeeze worth the juice that you get, is the question. And I don't even know if that's the case. You know, I used to be Bill. You know, when the whole Monica Lewinsky thing went down, I got a button that said I slept with Clinton too. But I did, because that was so
ridiculous. Why you wore that blue dress for 4 years? I was wondering, what the hell?
yes, that's what's in that plastic bag in my closet. But I mean, you know, I just don't think that there's any real great affection for Barack Obama. I don't think there's any real love lost between the two of them, and I just really don't understand why. I don't know if Bill is jealous because Barack Obama is taking his place as one of the most beloved Democratic presidents ever. You know, I mean, of course there's Kennedy, but Barack is going to be up on that list as far as Democrats are concerned. I don't know if all the historical stuff, the historical nature of his election and historical bills he's tried to pass and how he got further with the health care issue than the Clinton administration did, I just don't know. But I really think that Bill is like, oh, shit, I got to do this. All right, y'all.
Well, okay, so let me give you my take. And I wish some of the people who are listening in online were able to dial in, and you can see the number 347-205-9763 to dial in and comment. I look at Bill Clinton, his involvement right now, as a good thing. Whether he is on board totally with Barack Obama or not, and I think you touched on a point, I think part of it is that Bill Clinton was sure that Hillary was going to win, as sure as Hillary was sure she was going to win, and is a little salty because she didn't. Personally, I think Bill's a little salty because it meant that Hillary was going to be home all the time.
Strong about my game. I wish she'd go somewhere.
Are you going to cast shade on my
right,
plate?
Right.
But
now I got to get a real love nest.
I got to stay up in New York all the time. Can't get back to Washington and be first Bubba, baby. But, you know, he doesn't have to like Barack Obama. I am sure there was no love lost between Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush. It has come out that there really was a lot of love lost after or towards the end of the second George W. Bush administration between Cheney and W.
Yeah, but was the first W praising the opponent?
No, but what you have is a situation where, you know, let's go back in history, let's go back in literature. Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. The good that men do oft lives after them. And I forgot the rest of my high school Shakespeare, but...
You know what? You're so sexy when you smart.
I wish I had my book out here in front of me. I could read more of it, but... Because I'm mentally undressing you with my mouth.
Right. Okay, keep going.
But to praise Mitt Romney, I think is smart. I think it's something that the Obama people should have done to begin with. They should have come out with. Again, we all have our opinions. We're all entitled to it. But I think he should have come out with, or the Obama administration should have come out with. Of course Mitt Romney was great at Bain. Of course Mitt Romney created a wonderful company at Bain, and it was good for making money for its investors and its customers. But running a business where you don't have to worry about your employees is different than running the country. George W. Bush proved that having a business mind, though not a business acumen, because we know that George W. Bush failed at every business he tried for years, having a business mind does not work in the federal government. There are so many levels of bureaucracy to get anything done in the federal government. It doesn't work that way in the private sector. I've worked in both. Washington, D.C., and the federal government is a different beast. And a lot of people have difficulty transitioning from one to the other because it's just a different way of thing, the way things get done. And I think it was smart for Bill Clinton to come out and say Mitt Romney was good in business, and they need to capitalize on that, how great he was at business and how horrible he was at governing Massachusetts, and how a man so good at business and so bad at politics has been chasing this same job for the last, 16 years?
I can't remember. He ran in, the first time he ran was in 2000, wasn't it?
I thought it was 96. I could be, no, wait a minute. He was governor of Massachusetts from 2002 to 2006?
Okay, then he ran for president before that.
Anybody online that knows the answer to this, please let us know. Please find a way to contact us because I don't want to look it up. But he has not held any other political office since. He has run unsuccessfully. I know he ran unsuccessfully against John McCain in 2008. I'm almost certain in 2004 he was running as well. But his whole political career has been chasing one job.
Unsuccessfully.
And
I think that he got the, and it's obvious that he got the nomination this time by default because all of them sucked. He just sucked the least.
Yeah, to borrow the line from the Charlie Sheen movie Hot Shots, he's the best of what's left. He's the best of what's left. He's not the bestest and the brightest. You know, as late as, February, March, they were still trying to get Chris Christie to come off of his fat butt and run for president. He's the best of what's left.
And you know what? And again, to the Republicans eating their young, the best candidate was John Huntsman, period, point blank.
Exactly right. But he too was a Mormon.
But you know what? They sliced and diced him. I don't care if he's a Mormon or not. I mean, as he was, even I could get behind him. You know, I'm a vote Democrat. But I mean, if I had to choose, if I, you know, if there was a gun to my head, I would have chose Huntsman because he was smart. He had a handle on foreign policy. I liked what he had to say about the economy. I liked what he had to say in foreign policy, not just in terms of how we deal with China and how we deal with that, but just his outlook was similar to Barack Obama's. You know, he didn't want to go out there and just shoot up everybody who disagreed with us. And they ate him alive and kicked him to the curb. And he was their best shot. If of those candidates, anybody who could have given Barack Obama a run for their money, it was John Huntsman.
It was John Huntsman, but again, he was too moderate and too sensible talking. And I have to say that when you said you could get behind him, I think Rick Santorum just cringed.
Why you bring Satan in on the conversation?
Devil's a liar. I got proof. But, you know, the healthy thing about even this ugly process that we're going through right now, the healthy thing about it is it's gotten Michael Steele out of political office and on television where he can show how ridiculous he is.
Right, to everybody, so he can make my head hurt. I cannot. Oh, Lord Jesus, Michael Steele drives me crazy. He is so, is unsavvy a word? He is so unsophisticated. And, you know, everybody on MSNBC eats him for lunch on more than one occasion. Because, I mean, government's not in the business of making jobs. What?
Right.
Are you kidding me? That's how we roll. We wear our hat to the side. What? Okay. So now we've got a minstrel show.
Michael Steele, again, has once again missed the point of everything he's done since Mike Tyson and his sister divorced. He has been the token in every job he's had since then.
That's right.
Lieutenant Governor of Maryland, because Bob Ehrlich needed a black face to legitimize his role to try to get some black votes.
And really, what does the lieutenant governor do except for take the place of the governor when the governor is thrown out by scandal? I mean, honestly.
There's a lot of ribbon cutting that goes on.
Right, but I mean, if you anybody who's politically savvy and you ask them who the governor was, they'll say, oh, it was so-and-so. They go, who was lieutenant governor? Well, see, what had happened was, don't nobody know who a lieutenant governor is.
Well, the two most famous lieutenant governors that I remember learning about is Teddy Roosevelt was lieutenant governor of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And Lyndon Johnson was lieutenant governor of Maryland before he became governor of Maryland, and then he became – no, wait a minute. Yeah. Lyndon Johnson was governor of Maryland. I thought he was lieutenant governor. I might have to pull that back. He may not have been lieutenant.
Okay, so how about I didn't know he was the governor of Maryland. I would have thought somebody said Texas. Really?
I'm sorry. Did I say Lyndon Johnson? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Spiro T. Agnew. They looked alike
See,
to me when I
See, why you got my brain exploding? I was like, now look,
you
I know me
them
some
thoughts.
I know me some LBJ.
No, he was Spiro T. Agnew was governor of Maryland.
How you kid Lyndon B. Johnson from Spiro Agnew?
When I was six, they both looked like tall, balding white men. They all looked the same to me. I didn't know the difference. But I have to say that he may not have been lieutenant governor of Maryland, but he definitely was governor of Maryland. And yeah,
who?
So
Johnson or Agnew?
Agnew was governor of Maryland when he became vice president under Richard Nixon.
So who's on first?
That would be Herman Cain.
He's on nine. He's on ninth base. Okay, so look, we got like 5 minutes left. Let's touch upon Wisconsin for a minute, because you know I'm just chomping on the bit for that. So, no results. And we're not going to see the results probably for another hour, hour and a half, I think. I think it closes at like 8 o'clock their time. So I think for another hour. But this is such a significant election, as you and I know, because if Scott Walker somehow manages to stay in office, the, what is it, seven other Republican governors who have been trying to shaft the American people, the governor of Florida, the governor of Indiana, the governor of Michigan, the governor of Ohio, governor of New Jersey, are going to use this as a jumping off point to further try to destroy unions and kill the middle class. This is a battle for the middle class, you know. And all those Wisconsinites who are currently listening, go vote, please, 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 please. I mean, there's so much at stake. The Republicans in Wisconsin politics right now, in the House and everything, they are out of control. The state senator, who is the one in charge over there, what's his name, Fitzgerald, he and his brother are running the state Senate, and they have been passing bills that help their friends. You know that the Democrats famously got ghost for 3 weeks, so the bill wouldn't pass. There was a retirement, so the House, the Senate House in Wisconsin is split. There are 16 Republicans, 16 Democrats, and one independent. So there's still gridlock there, and it's just crazy, crazy, crazy. You know, there's talk about Walker having a criminal defense fund because of what happened when he was running Milwaukee. And, you know, we've all seen the television commercial, I mean, the television ads where he's talking to somebody who he thinks is one of the Koch brothers, and he's talking to that one woman, and all he's talking about is union busting. And admittedly, he admittedly says that he did not run on this platform. When he was running for governor, he did not say anything about union busting. Nothing. But once he got to office and once he got the power, he set forth this agenda that he never ran on. So even the Republican voters of Wisconsin need to be a little salty because they got a bait and switch. You know, Wisconsin is literally the birth of labor unions. The birth. And to have this going on in the state that has given birth to what has arguably one of the most important things to the middle class of America be under fire is just ridiculous. I mean, even the lieutenant governor, talking about lieutenant governors, right? But even the lieutenant governor over there, she's off the hook too. You know, she's come out against same-sex marriages saying, oh, well, then, you know, if you let people have same-sex marriages, then what's next? You marry a table? Yeah, okay.
Well, they do have those knot holes in some of them.
Right. You know, and I was looking at this table over at Macy's, and I was like, I want you. Whatever. Whatever. So, anyway, you know, if you haven't gone out and voted, you have to go out and vote, and the returns are going to be coming in about an hour. They started early voting a week ago, so nobody knows exactly what the fallout is going to be, how this is going to land, because this is setting precedents. They've never had an opportunity. They've never, I think Gray Davis was the only governor that's ever been recalled. So this is really only the second time this has happened. And they have never really had this much of this big of a stake of an election in June. So they can't even, you know, look at it historically and say, well, all previous Junes, this is what happened. I mean, this is a starting point. And if this happens, if they get Walker out of office, I believe that it's going to turn the tide in a good way in Florida, Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, because they're going to see, oh, okay, we can't just come in here and act stupid because the people will rise up.
Well, Paul, I'm letting you have the last word on that. I couldn't have said it better, I want to thank everyone for listening in, joining in. hope to catch you next week. Come back. And as Kamal said, right, Bentley, vote. Vote early and often, as they used to in Chicago. And we'll see you all this next week. Bad Times, Bad Channel. Thank everyone who called in, everyone who has been online listening. Have a safe week. Once again, Delmonica, love you, babe. Love you.
Bye.